Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are plowing through the next month.
Yeah, it's March.
Another month.
It just keeps going by.
Ides of March are coming up.
Yeah, a little bit longer this time, though. It doesn't end as quickly. We have 31 days. That's good. Time enough for me to sober up after my booze cruise this weekend.
Oh, God. Here we go.
So, you know, they have these new things where they've had them before, but it's kind of standardized on a lot of cruises now that drinks are included. So I broke my old
record. Bad idea. People would be falling over to the side.
They were. People were absolutely plastered the entire cruise. So we get to the first stop.
Which What's the average age on this cruise?
I would say about 30-ish, maybe 40. Hmm. There's definitely some older, some younger, but definitely some, I would say a bunch of groups that were in the mid-30s. And we get to our first island and they look out and they said, you know, if you take a look at those beautiful waves that are breaking over the rocks over by that lighthouse, it's lovely. Unfortunately, we can't get you onto the island. So we're just going to hang out here today. So we hung out, had some nice dinner. So I'm usually a 3-martini guy.
Hold on a second.
Yeah.
How many islands were you supposed to stop at?
We were supposed to stop at this one island, which is owned by Norwegian, and then Nassau.
And you stopped at just Nassau?
Yeah, because we couldn't go to the first island.
Sounds like a scam. Okay, yeah. Go on.
So the first night we go out to dinner and I have, before dinner, like 2 martinis, vodka martinis. During dinner, I had like 3 martinis. And then in the casino, I had another like 3 martinis. How much did that add up to? 3, 6, 8 martinis. That's enough to drop a horse.
And meanwhile, yeah, they probably watered back.
I got to tell you something. No kidding, because the next night I had 10 martinis. And I was, I was feeling good, but I'm telling you, I was not.
Nobody can drink 10 martinis.
I'm telling you, I agree with you wholeheartedly. Wholeheartedly, I agree with you. Somehow, something's not right. I saw them pour it out of the bottle too, the Tito's. I saw them pour it. That
doesn't mean anything. You can't tell can you tell by looking at it that it's not just straight water?
Nope. Well, it was definitely had some flavor to it, a vodka, but no, I definitely agree that I did not consume 10 martinis and continue on the evening. I wasn't even, I should have been gone.
Yeah. And spinning.
Right. And then I was in the casino.
Well, I think they should be busted for this.
Something's not right. I don't know. Something definitely was not right. I was in the casino and there was a guy sitting next to me at the blackjack table. Oh, I had a whole thing. I had an eruption at the blackjack table. First, I sit down. We play. Long story short, my buddy gets a blackjack and they pay him. And he says, wait, this is not right. What do you mean it's not right? Sure it is. Look at that. It's right now. There's the money put down. Here it is. No, but I should have been paid 3-2 for a blackjack. No, no.
Paid 3-2 on blackjack.
6-5 at this table. We said, what are you talking about? Oh, this table pays 6-5. You go to this next table over here, it's 3-2. Okay. All right. We'll let that one slide. We'll walk over to the other table. We'll play the 3-2. We're playing. And I said, is this a continuous shuffle? Because they had this weird contraption. I said, is it a continuous shuffle or a shoe? Oh, it's a 6-deck shoe. We start playing and I'm like 3 hands in. I said, that's a continuous shuffle. Oh, yes, it is. Oh, all right, we'll play. So we're playing and next thing I know, we get some cards and the dealer has a soft 17. Now, in Vegas rules, that's it.
Right? Everybody's rules. You have to, what?
In Vegas, you stay there. You don't move. Right?
Yeah, you have to stay. There's the rules.
That's the rules. The casino rules, the dealer has a soft 17, they stay.
Actually, in many casinos, any 17.
Yeah. No, it's definitely 17. Well, normal 17 and soft 17. So he has an ace and a 6. And what does he do? Flips a card. I said, what are you doing? We take a hit on a soft 17. I said, what do you mean? Because it can only improve your hand, right? Well,
you can't go wrong.
Right. So the dealer has another benefit there. Now this is like 4 things now that have happened. I go berserk. What the hell is wrong with this place?
What was the name of this ship? The SS Al Capone?
Oh, it was bad. I mean, it was enjoyable, the cruise. We had a nice time. except for when we left, because we get back on the ship after my time in Nassau. And as we're walking up the staircase on the ship, I notice there's these little boxes on each of the staircases that are kind of like there for your taking. What were they? Barf bags. I said, what are the barf bags for? Oh, we're going to have 15 to 20 foot seas tonight. I said, what? What? Really? Yep, 15 to 20 foot seas. So we start to leave Nassau and the boat is definitely rocking and rolling a bit. It got calm for the next few hours. And then about 1 a.m., it started to get pretty rough. But good news, I went to sleep by then. It was ugly. So that was my cruise. Not going on.
Well, I wouldn't cruise with those guys.
I've cruised with them many times, and this was definitely an all-time low. And you know what it's all about? It's all about the public corporation having to make money versus the old days where it was all about the customer experience. Terrible. Oh, well. Well, let's do a quick market update. I guess the first, the only thing, we need that guy that screams on your No Agenda show, the guy that says, who's the guy that screams Putin? Putin.
Yeah, that guy. Yeah,
we need tariffs. We need
Fletcher.
Tariffs. Tariffs. Oh, causing lots of trouble in the markets. Lots of volatility has returned. It's been there for a little while, but this whole tweet about we're going to impose tariffs, 25% on steel and 10% on aluminum. Oh, my God. The steel companies do well. The auto companies get squashed. The aluminum companies, anybody like, you know, in canning, car companies, airlines, anybody that's using these products. Because the problem is, while it may be good for the companies that are actually manufacturing or, you know, the steel, everybody else is going to get price increases. Because what will happen is they'll raise the prices domestically to match the tariff price that you can get from somewhere else or just underneath it. That's what happens.
Yeah, that's what you would have to do.
It's bad. So markets finished in the red last week, snapping a two-week run of gains. And we saw another impressive reversal on Friday from down, I don't know, 150 points on the Dow to up 300 or something like that. It was like a massive swing. And again, we have these announcements about tariffs going on. And, you know, generally economic data is, you know, looking good. Many reports are suggesting that inflationary pressures are building. And that's going to be the case again with tariffs. We're going to see more inflation if these go into play. Powell's first testimony was seen very hawkish by many people who are listening. They talked about possibly a move to 3 or maybe 4 rate hikes, depending on the data. And then tonight we got the granddaddy of them all. I don't know if you saw this yet, but Gary Cohn is resigning.
I thought the last report was he had actually finally resigned.
Yes. All right. He resigned. Resigning, yeah. Resigned. Yeah. However you want to look at it. He resigned. Now, this is the key, the most, probably one of the most important people in the White House dealing with economics. A real smart guy, formerly of Goldman Sachs. And everybody was fearing that if he would resign, what would go on? We're calling this the Cohn groan. Because futures snapped down about 400 points after the close tonight.
Yeah.
S&P futures are down hard. Futures are, they're off 250 now. They're definitely trying to rise a little bit here. Dollar sold off. Gold was up. And it seems like he was the only one with any kind of economic sanity at the White House. And now there's a gent that is getting the ear of President Trump trying to push these tariffs through. Now, you know the history. What happened the last time we had major tariffs in the U.S.? Remember Smoot-Hawley?
Well, every time we have major... Well, first of all, I don't think Cohn leaving is a big deal. There's a turnover that amounts to about every 16 months, everybody turns over. And he's also a globalist, which is kind of not what Trump wants in there. It's believed that he was only in there to help push through the tax hike to the other globalists.
Tax cut.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I said tax hike.
Yeah.
To the other globalist. And once he did that, his job was done. Well, typically, tariffs tend to coincide with market crashes and economic downturns. It's not unusual. Then one of our first economic downturns was during Thomas Jefferson's era. He threw in some crazy tariffs over something or other he was irked about, very similar to Trump. And had a kind of a depression.
But the problem is that the world, by a long shot, was not as globalized back then. You know, you have a lot of, I mean, it was much tougher to get steel from China if they even produced it.
Well, yeah, they weren't importing a lot of steel in 1770.
Yeah. Or agriculture.
True, but every time, but it's like it's kind of a universal given that tariffs are not a good thing. But there seems to be a lot of tariffs put on our goods.
Yeah.
And that hasn't really caused a downturn at all. It's just we can't do it, I guess. I don't know. I'm not as negative about all this as everybody else.
I just think it's a real negative in that the amount of tariffs you put on, you want to put on a couple of bucks on there to even the score a little bit. Okay. But a 25% steel tariffs, that's pretty hot. I mean, 10% aluminum. Okay. You want to go 10%, 5%, 25%. And then now the problem is not so much these tariffs in themselves. The problem is, we're already hearing retaliation commentary from other sources, other places, Europe and China and, you know, Japan. They're all talking about, okay, you're going to do that, then we're going to up ours. And the problem you have is...
It seems to me it's mostly the EU that's grousing.
They're pissed. Well, and Canada...
And Trump's already come back with a comment. He says, you want to get into this? I'm going to add 25% to every imported car.
You're right. yeah, doesn't
he says that'll put an end to it.
Yeah. Now the Mnuchin came in after the comments about tariffs. He hasn't chimed in yet about Gary Cohen, but Mnuchin chimed in and he's trying to soften it a little bit, saying, you know, maybe we won't put the tariffs so hard on Canada and Mexico. Maybe if they renegotiate NAFTA a little bit. And then the question was, wait, maybe this is just some kind of a bargaining chip. Maybe this is just the art of the negotiation, the art of the deal. Art of the deal.
Yeah, that's what a lot of people think that too, because it's possible. Because he does, Trump is a little bit flighty. He is not, he jumps around like a Mexican jumping bean.
Well, that's the problem. And that's the next point I was going to make. We have a constant thrust of information through tweets on various government initiatives. And then we see backpedaling or changing the narrative to fit the markets. And I was, you know, it has to be this idea of, you know, let's just throw up a trial balloon and see what happens. Let's just wake up one morning and say, hey, we're throwing tariffs on. Let's see what happens. Let's see if the market likes it. Let's see, you know, what happens from other leaders. And then we'll kind of correct, you know, because I'll be just general about it. And then we'll see what's happening and maybe the markets will confirm and we'll use that as a barometer. But the problem is you have this very off the cuff, from the hip type of governing, which in my opinion doesn't provide much in the way of any certainty. You got this constant flippity floppity stuff going on.
Well, I'm glad you've gone to this position on that boat ride.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got ripped off of no alcohol drinks.
Yeah, so
free drinks.
Yeah, I'm aggravated. Constant flippity floppity. That's what we're going to call it here. Trim Tabs put out a little announcement today. Said that U.S. equity funds lost $41 billion in February. People were very nervous about what's going on with the markets and took their money out of equity funds, which is the third highest outflow on record, which is really not the big issue there because, you know, we have a lot more money in the markets right now. But what was interesting about this was during that same period of time, global equity funds took in $17.9 billion. Now, a little bit of the backstory here. So I've had several different mutual fund reps in my office recently and by request. And we've had several conference calls with various institutional managers. And almost every single one, we asked them a lot of different questions. But one question we also ask them all the time is, what's your best idea for 2018? And almost, I think everybody has come back and said, buy the emerging markets and global equities due to better valuations. So this ties right into that, taking money out of U.S. equities. Meanwhile, I mean, yesterday or last week, the European markets hit a six-month low Emerging markets are holding up well. One of the reasons is that the dollar's been coming down and the, you know, their money comes up, so you get some of that benefit. But this is something that's being talked about quite a lot. And even if it's not the right play, they're all doing it, so therefore it becomes the right play.
Right, right.
You know?
Yeah, the gentleman's agreement again.
Yep, exactly. So there's something to keep an eye on of what's going to happen with global equities, in particular emerging market equities. Those are like your Latin America, maybe parts, certain parts of emerging Asia, certain parts of emerging Europe, Africa. Brazil is just kicking butt this year.
Again?
It's an unbelievable move on. It just doesn't stop. So we'll keep an eye on that. And we're seeing markets continuing to have these V moves. They move down, let's say, very hard, and all of a sudden they just pop right back up. Or they move up really fast and they move back down. Mm. So I got a quick picture, a screenshot of the V move from Monday morning into the open. So we saw this ramp up in futures in the morning up till 6 a.m. on Monday. By 9 a.m., they were hitting the bottom off by 20 points, almost 1% from the highs. The dinner bell rings at 9:30, and then it's off to the races. Then the next chart, these charts are available, by the way.
That's very funny, by the way. It's a good chart.
Yeah, wait till you see the next one. This is all these charts available on episode 398 for the show notes over on dhunplugged.com. So look at the next, an hour later now. So same chart, an hour later.
Hmm.
All green bars.
Yeah, and lots of them.
Yeah, lots of them.
There's not one moment.
That's right. Not one moment of breath to the downside.
Yeah, it's just bang, 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 yep. Bang, green, green, green. Up, 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 up.
Yep, that continuation move that we've seen quite often. I mean, there's a lot of buyers that are really, very much. See, I think what's happening now is since the S&P is below the 50-day moving average, we've seen a lot more volatility. There's a battle. And the battle is between the believers and analysts on the fundamental side saying, hey, look at the earnings, look at the economic backdrop, look at all the things that are going on, the deregulation, all these good things that are happening. And they're buying. And the technical guys are like, it's below the 50-day moving average. And we've seen a bit of a change in the dynamic of the charts. And there's a lot more volatility. So you got this constant battle going on right now. The fundamentalists, they don't look at any of this and moves as a concerning, and all they see is if it's down, wow, that's a good bargain at that price. That's all they see. Good bargain. It's down a little bit, let's buy. Because it's going to go higher, because look at all these earnings and the growth and the tax reform bill that's going to set, do some great things. And, look at all the economic numbers that are coming out. And they are doing well. The economics are doing well. I have a chart here on the ISM composites. Well over the 50 contraction zone. They've been that way for the last year and a half. Both the manufacturing and the non-manufacturing, the service index, that's doing well. But the problem is that all these things that we're also seeing, there's another side to it, is that they're all inflationary. Almost every economic indicator that we've seen lately, whether it's from jobs, which we're going to see a new number on Friday on the official jobs numbers, to manufacturing, to average hourly earnings, to housing and the prices of housing, all of these are inflationary. There's a chart there. I got a lot of charts of the show.
Yeah, you got charts.
A lot of charts.
Charts.
I see things better with charts. I'm a visual guy, kind of guy. So this is showing that the average hourly earnings, look at that spike towards the end on a year-over-year basis for average hourly earnings. We're seeing the biggest gain since, way back. And average hourly earning gains turn into potentially shopping and buying and turns into inflation.
I would think generally, yes.
And finally, we have the home prices. I put this together. This is a new chart we put together. Look at this. This is pretty amazing. This is the average sales price for new homes and the median sales price. This is a pretty amazing chart, isn't it?
Yeah. It shows you that real estate, because you can't make more of it, is going to creep up like this, no matter what, if you like it or not.
Yeah, even with that downturn.
Yeah, the downturn was substantial, but it was nothing. It's already gone way past that.
So, yeah, if you would have bought a house back in, what, 80, let's call it 87, 88, the median, or the average home price was about 150. And today it's approaching at, what, 400?
Yeah.
That's a pretty significant number for the average price of a home, 400,000.
Yeah, and that is leveraged.
Of course.
You don't pay 150. You make payments on a $150,000 loan. And they seldom get, the payout, you can't even pay your thing off until you're about 30 years in. And so you end up with, you're just making money. It's a good way to make money. In fact, they were talking about this on the PBS NewsHour, and they had this very strange little flat. They have a flash piece of flash information. They flash it up there. And I thought this was interesting. They said a homeowner over time generally has 35 times more net worth than a renter.
Due to the price of the home valuation?
I don't know why there's no explanation. It was just one of these flash it on the screen and live with it. And I don't know if it's true or not, but it was kind of what? That's a lot.
I would think that if you just use the value of the home on its own and you
because the house has gone up, but I think there's a lot more to it. There's a different attitude towards everything when you're a homeowner as opposed to a renter.
But if you're a renter and you put $1,000 a month into your rent, and let's just say it stays that way forever, and if you're for 30 years, and if you're a homeowner for 30 years, putting $1,000 a month in, at the end of that, maybe you'll have $150,000 where value of your home versus a renter, you have nothing.
Right. Yes. Well, you have nothing. It's true.
So, yeah. All right. On to some technology that I thought was interesting. And I thought, I think you tweeted something about this. Apple is coming out with a new high-end headphone thingajiggy. What are you drinking? You drinking a martini?
No, I have this new drink I invented.
Kombucha?
Oh, God, no. I'd like to live a long life.
What did you invent?
Okay, you take a tumbler and you fill it one-third with ice.
Uh-huh.
And then you cover that with Campari.
Oh.
And then you fill it up halfway to two-thirds of the way with grapefruit juice. And then you finish it off with soda and give it a stir.
Isn't it a little tart?
Oh, my God, no. This is the best drink you'll ever have.
A little Campari, grapefruit juice, soda, and ice.
Yeah.
And how many of those do you drink a day?
I only drink them about once every few days.
Oh, I gotcha. Just a little bit of alcohol in there, though.
I was thirsty. The problem with this drink, it's a refresher. And it's you when you drink it, you really just want to down it. Is that good?
Campari. My grandmother used to drink Campari and soda.
Campari and grapefruit juice and soda is better.
Yeah, it sounds that way. Very nice. Well, Apple is coming out with some new earphones. You know, they have those AirPods that work pretty well. I've tried them. They're actually surprisingly good.
Yeah. Yeah, you lose one and you lose them both.
That's a problem. So, now they're coming out with noise-canceling over-the-ear headphones that rival headsets from market leaders like Bose or even the company's own Beats by Dre brand. Yeah. So they're going to launch this. They're going to make the best ones ever. I'm a little confused about this. Are they going to compete with Beats?
Yeah, I guess so.
They're going to compete with their own headset.
Yeah, I don't know why they just don't put them out under the Beats brand, but apparently it costs them more to do that than it's. So they essentially are competing against Beats. They're going to drive Beats out of business.
So they buy Beats. They get all their technology and understanding of how they build what they build. Then they
probably jobbed out to the Chinese. Come on, let's be real.
Right. And it's going to be an over-the-ear headphones, which everybody was going for slimmer styling, less over-the-ear. In earphones.
In the business, they're called cans.
Okay. Yeah. But they're going to have it at the end of this year. Amazon is in talks with JP Morgan Chase and Capital One Financial Corporation about offering the tech giant's millions of customers a product similar to a checking account. I don't know what that means, product similar to a checking account.
Similar.
Now, the target is younger customers and people without checking accounts. The strategy would help Amazon lower fees it pays to financial firms and gives it a bigger window into customers' income and spending habits. So I suppose they're going to come up with some kind of maybe like a PayPal-ish
debit card
kind of thing.
Yeah. Debit card.
They have a debit card, don't they have? Or maybe they have a credit card. So you can put money in there. They're going to know how much money you have and maybe just target you down to the last penny of what you have in your account.
Bang on you until you give it all up.
This guy has $42.75. Let's give him two products that meet exactly that amount with tax. I guess.
It's the new algo.
So now PayPal was down on that news, at least initially. And just another area that Amazon is trying to get into. I don't think there's many areas they haven't tried to get into at this point. But it's taken over the world. Netflix hits an all-time high over $300 per share after they won, an Oscar. Did you watch the Oscars?
Yeah, I did, actually. I watched them. I watched the entire presentation.
Oh, and give me a quick report because I didn't see it.
I thought it was very funny. It was lighthearted. Gorgeous sets that were very high-tech. I thought the sets some of them were astonishing. And it moved along pretty quickly. It was long, as usual, but it wasn't bad. There wasn't a lot of preaching. There was some. And I enjoyed it. I thought it was a good show, but it got the worst ratings in history.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's because, as President Trump said, there are no good actors anymore. No, there are
no stars.
No new good stars anymore besides himself.
Yeah. Yeah. And he said, I'm joking.
Yeah. Not.
I think he's maybe kind of right.
The problem is...
I don't think there's a lot of celebrities that anyone wants to go out of their way to see just to present an award. They don't do, the music acts aren't that interesting because the songs are pretty dull. It's not like, even the Tonys have got more going on than that. And so there's not a lot of, music or good, some good presentations. And I think a lot of the public thought there was just going to be a bunch of Me Too, women only, and all this sort of thing. And there was a lot of that, but it wasn't as bad as it could have been.
Well, the problem is that even if you are in agreement with many of the things that they say in terms of the left, the Hollywood left, let's say you are, okay, it's enough already. I'm watching the award show. I don't need to be, as you said, preached to. I'm not interested in all that crapola, whether I agree with it or not.
I think that's what killed the show.
Yeah. Well, let me give you some stats on Netflix. So it hit over $300 per share. They recently, not too long ago, raised their rates. Nobody really flinched. They're getting some really good traction in other markets aside from the U.S. Their trailing PE is now 250 times earnings. Their forward PE is 75 times earnings. The PEG ratio is 1.38. Year over year, their EPS growth was pretty impressive, though, 175%. They have $2.82 billion of cash, $6.5 billion of debt, and they have a negative $1.79 billion of operating cash flow. So they're bleeding cash and obviously ballooning their debt. And the stock keeps going higher.
Now,
what's interesting about this is that about a month and a half ago, for the first time ever, Netflix made all of my screening criteria to add to one of our client portfolio strategy.
Sorry?
So forever, Netflix never made it into my screening criteria. We look for earnings growth. And
I already have your little formula.
Right. Never made it. And a month and a half ago, they qualified. And
what changed?
Their earnings growth, their margin expansion, their earnings growth. And on top of that, their ROE was at levels that were acceptable. I mean, it just hit all numbers.
What is it going to take from your perspective for Netflix to ever make a profit?
I think it's kind of like a little different than Amazon. So Amazon builds property. Remember when Amazon wasn't making a profit because they were pouring it all back into the distribution centers and to the expansion? Right. The difference is that Amazon could stop after a while. The difference is Netflix has to keep pumping money in for new shows and for production. And the problem is that doesn't, you don't just stop. You don't just build it and it's done. They have to keep coming up with new things to keep the audience excited and to pay exorbitant rates for production, high production. So the only thing that can happen is if they hit a level of users and that you know, somewhere they get a big hit in India and China, and they get over the top where they're not blowing out money on the, you know, they're making enough money to keep up with the production. So.
Tall order.
Yeah, it's tall order. But it could happen. It could definitely happen. Let me, I don't know what I just did here. Let's go here. Mm. Let's see, go down here. Okay. All right, next thing on the list. Okay. So after everybody was on board with a great 2018 for stocks, right? Everybody, 2018 is going to be a great year. We're going to have, you know, continuation of 2017, low volatility and all that. Well, obviously, we saw that downturn in late January, February. Now, everybody's on board for a retest of the February lows before the end of the year. So we were all on board with, you know, great stock market. Now we're on, everybody's talking about, oh, retest of the February lows before it rebounds and hits a new high by the end of the year. So that's the new narrative. So does this mean that it won't happen that way, or?
Well, we know it won't happen that way, yeah. But.
So here's the choices.
By definition.
Right. So here are the choices. So if everybody's believing this now, or saying it at least, they say they believe this, is that A, no test of the lows are in the cards. B, a test of the lows then break lower with no bounce. Or C, it plays out exactly as suggested.
Hmm. Well, C is not not going to win. Because these guys couldn't do that in a million years. Right. So we automatically know that's out.
So let's put this into the equation. That the markets will do everything they can to confound the masses. Right?
Yes.
So if everybody's on board with a retest of the February lows before a new high by the end of the year, then we have, again, no test of the lows or a test and a break lower with no bounce.
I would go, it could be either one of those two. It's going to be one or the other of those two.
Right.
And I would guess that would be the one that where it goes lower. That's the one that takes into account the cycle, the economic cycle, takes into account the need to screw over Trump's economy so they can get him voted out. And it also accounts for the municipal bonds and some of these other shaky citywide problems that we're going to have with corporate eventually, but
yeah,
the stuff that has to do with unfunded liabilities.
Right. So I would say it's going to be, well, I'm not predicting this, but if it is, we're thinking that it's going to confound the masses, you would have a test of the low and then break lower with no bounce. Because no test of the lows and a bounce higher, they're halfway right there. You know, I mean, they're kind of right, and that's kind of, we had the low already and it's going to go higher, and everybody's, they're thinking bullish by the end of the year.
Which definitely is not going
to
happen.
Right, so a test of the low and then break lower with no bounce, ending the year lower, would seem to be the one that would confound the most. Because everybody's going to be, okay, we tested the lows, get their money in. Now they're going to put the money in, right?
Right, which is just the time it starts being stolen.
Yep, exactly. All right, what else do we have? Walmart starting to offer prepared meals at its stores for the first time. I'm not exactly sure what that exactly means, but...
I know kind of what it means. In England, when I was roaming around during last Thanksgiving, I went to all the stores. I went to all the retailers and checked everything out. I went to the Apple store. I went to Marks and Spencer's, and they're not the only ones, but many of these guys have these huge sections of pre-made food.
Kind of like Whole Foods?
No, a little more. Whole Foods is kind of... they have some this like Whole Foods on steroids, I'd say, because Whole Foods has these different counters. You can kind of put together your own meal. You can because they have these containers and they have these. It's like a buffet,
right?
At Whole Foods, yeah. And you load up with different things, and they charge you by the pound, and they probably make all their money on the mashed potatoes, and. No, these are actually prepared. I'm trying to think of a place that has these. Do we have a chain out here called Andronico's that does some of this? But there's some other places that do this, and they're like a complete meal in a package. And it's nothing, you can't dick with it, it's sealed.
You don't have to make it yourself, though. You just heat it up.
No, no, no. It's already done. It's like chicken cacciatore or something like that. It'll have a
So it's like potatoes. A high-grade TV dinner.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, already cooked TV dinner.
Right. Can't screw it up. Because everybody's bitching and moaning, oh, this is going to be the end of Blue Apron and, you know, all that. Now they're going to have 10 different meals in 250 stores. They're going to expand to 2,000 locations by year's end. So I guess the thought is maybe if any listeners have eaten any of these, tasted any of these, seen any of these, we need a report. How awful they are.
I'm sure they're not great.
And there's something going on. This is something I think we need to focus on, at least talk through. But so there's something happening, a trend in the social media space in terms of advertising. And it seems that once again, Procter & Gamble announced last week that it cut its digital advertising spend by $200 million last year based on viewership data provided by a couple of different companies that showed that its ads were not reaching its target audience effectively. Now, it could be a combination of things why that is. But then they announced today a $1.3 billion cut over the next few years. That's a chunk of change.
Yes, because the numbers of many websites and they got robots hitting the sides to rack the numbers up. They got fake click-throughs. They have programmatic click-throughs. There's a scam going on. It's been going on for probably 5 years.
Well, the question is this going to hurt Facebook, Twitter, and all these other dudes? I mean, it's got to hurt something.
It's got to hurt him a little bit. I don't know if it's going to hurt him as much as just the general loss.
I wonder if it's a little bit bigger than just the bots. I wonder if it's also the whole content thing and the fake news and the crap that's going on and the inability for people to really know what's real and what's not anymore.
I don't think so. I honestly believe it's the fake numbers.
So you think they're getting hit by too much because the bots are hitting and people are hitting pages that aren't really there. And that's why they're not getting an effective reach to their audience because it's never getting to the audience.
Yeah, it looks like it's got a bunch of, well, we had, you know, 10,000 people clicked on this, but we got one sale. How's that work?
Yeah. So I don't know if there's going to be a trend with other companies as well. I mean, this is Procter & Gamble saying it.
Procter & Gamble is a leader. Yeah. So yes, answer, yes.
Okay. Let's see what they have here. Fed Dudley came out. Dudley, who has been a bit hawkish lately. He said that in terms of gradual rate hikes this year, that may mean 4 by the end of 2018. So people weren't too happy about that.
No.
So they're kind of going on that. We saw that there was an election in Italy. And Beppe Grillo, who led the five-star movement, he's a comedian. He seemed to emerge as a big winner in the elections.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it's not so unbelievable. Another populist movement. Still don't have a handle on the whole populist thing. Like, what's so great about it?
Well, what's so bad about it?
I'm not saying it's bad either. I just don't understand why I say what's so great about it is they're voting for him left and right all over the place. And I don't know how you qualify. Why don't they have a populist party? They don't seem to have that.
Populism has it has a negative. It's been given a negative implication, but I think the only negative implication, I think the media and other people who do not like nation states, they prefer to have a borderless world and global governance. I think they're the ones behind the negative projection of what populism is. Oh, populism is terrible. That guy's a populist.
Well, is populism?
I don't see what the big deal is.
Are they equating it to nationalism?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I guess. Here's something interesting.
And nationalism. Nationalism is what? Nation state that rules itself. That can't be good. You want global governance. You don't want any nations.
Open borders. Everybody's the same.
Open borders. Everyone can go wherever they want and just live it up.
That's because there's nobody better than anybody else. Everybody's equal. Everybody should have. There shouldn't be the haves and have-nots. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's something about, I thought, very fascinating out of Disney. So nearly 3/4 of both full-time and part-time employees, 73%, reported that they didn't make enough money from their job at the Disneyland Resort to pay for basic expenses each month.
Now, this was done, surprise me.
Yeah, but this is done by a survey conducted on the behalf of a group of unions by Occidental College and the Economics Roundtable. This is a nonprofit research organization based in L.A. that advocates for raising the minimum wage. So do you think they would have come out with anything else in their report?
They're making too much money.
Yeah. Just, this is the problem with all this. You know, we have all these special, special interest group doing these kind of things to try to, it poisons us. I'm sick of them.
Not arguing.
Yeah, I can see that. So I put an oy vey on this. You ever hear oy vey? Oy vey, it's Yiddish.
Yeah, it's shortened to oy.
Yeah, oy veysmir. Oy veysmir. Oy gewalt. My grandmother I used to.
What's oy gewalt specifically mean?
Oy gewalt's like, oy, my Jesus, oh my God. Oy vey is a similar thing. Oy vey, oy gewalt. Oy gewalt's a little bit more of an oy vey, a harder line than oy vey. And then I used to go to my grandmother's house, and I would go over there, and she says, Andy, oh, you Shana Velt, Shana Punim, come over here. So it would mean Shana Velt is best in the world. Shana Velt is beautiful face.
Or, she's like farsighted, had astigmatism.
Yeah. And then she gave me a big, fat, wet kiss. Come over here. You know? And you know the one thing about my grandmother's house, this one grandmother, it was an amazing thing, this Jewish grandmother. I could appear at her house unannounced anytime during the day or night. And within about 1 minute of me getting in there and her hugging me and all that, somehow magically there's an entire plate of food ready for me at the table. It's unbelievable.
That's talent.
Yeah, unbelievable. Miss her terribly. Snapchat is sent, and this is the oy vey part of it here. Snapchat is said to be working on two new spectacles products. You know, the glasses?
Didn't they do this once already?
Oh, yes, they did. And they only lost $40 million the last time around.
Yeah, I've always wanted to get a pair of those. Would they bury them in the desert? What happened to them?
I don't know. Future? I mean, I don't know if they...
They should have put them on sale for $10 each. Yeah. It was just cool to have.
Yep. So this second generation model that offers bug fixes. Well, that's good to know. That's right up in the front.
bug fixes.
Performance improvements and new colors in an ambitious version that could feature two lenses and more advanced camera technology that can cost up to $300.
Oh, come on. Bring the price down to something realistic.
Yeah. How much do you think they'll lose on this foray?
At least as much.
Yeah. Carl Icahn's in a bit of hot water. It seems that he sold 1 million shares of Manitowoc, which is, heavy equipment, just days before the announcement of tariffs on steel. He hasn't been active in the stock in years.
Oh, and he's good buddies with Trump, according to Trump.
Yep. Maybe he's like, hey, why don't you put some tariffs in there? We'll get rid of my 1 million shares of Manitowoc. So they're looking into this whole thing with him.
Yeah, that is fishy.
Yep. Let's see here. You know what? I think we're going to hold the limericks till next show. Is that okay?
Oh,
we can do it right. Okay. Nobody sent me limericks this week.
Oh, okay. We'll hold the next show until somebody sends us some limericks. No, two is not enough. We need four.
All right. So send in your Fed limericks, please. Of course, with sending in the Fed limericks at the same time, with the same stroke, with the same click of the mouse, please go over and donate to the show. That's how we keep breathing. Keep the cost for the streaming and the various, you know, all the different high production that we do here. We keep that at, you know.
Well, the streaming does cost money.
Yes. But to go over to dhunplug.com and just click on the donate button, please. If you haven't done so already, it's your time to do so. And you know, if you're concerned that we didn't do the limericks, I think do me a favor, pay up, and we'll make sure to get them on next time. But we have one about the Fed and one about Curry, actually.
Yeah, I looked at these two limericks. Yeah, already. Yeah,
already not thrilled. They seem to be more of an annoyance than anything for you. So we'll do that next week.
I enjoy it.
All right. So next week we'll do that. We got a lot of emails in on the channeling various market prognosticators. Remember that from last week?
Yeah. That's good.
People want us to put more, they gave me names to do of other ones.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we'll see. Anyway, we're going to announce now the winner of the DHO plug close to the pin for Caterpillar last week. John did not participate. I gave you a gigantic red cross through. You see that?
Yeah, I'm looking at it now.
You forgot. Now, I did send you a reminder to give me your guess for McDonald's, which is, we're announcing that. That is the next close to the pin is McDonald's, the hamburger joint, and now breakfast place. So that is now open for business. You can go put your price guesses in right on the top right when you go to DH Unplugged. There's a little button to click, and you'll be able to put your best guess in for McDonald's and have a chance to not only win a T-shirt, one-of-a-kind, wonderful design T-shirt, but also a beautiful certificate, as well as entry into the year-end, which there's all sorts of nice prizes and trophies and all that. But the winner this week is Brian P. He came in a price, 53 cents from the actual price. The average price was 160 from all the various contestants, and the price finished at 146. A lot of that had to do with the fact that tariffs, back to tariffs again, tariffs. And Jeffrey F. was the runner-up at 0.58. I was about 3.5, almost 4% off on it. Actually, it was a lot higher for a while and then just kind of plunged. Let's see here. All right, an update on Martin Shkreli.
Shkreli, yeah.
You know, Pharma Bro. He has to give up a Picasso, a one-of-a-kind Wu-Tang Clan album, and $7.36 million that he is convicted of defrauding investors. And I guess he's going to possibly spend like, I don't know, initially like 15 months in jail. But it seems that now they're looking for like years. And this is the guy that, by the way, he's such an ass that he goes into jail. They put him up there and they're going to have, you know, they're going to offer him the opportunity to post bail. But what does he do? While he's in jail, his bail was revoked after he offered a $5,000 bounty for a strand of Hillary Clinton's hair in a Facebook post.
Huh.
And his bail was revoked.
The guy's a screwball.
Total screwball. Lunatic. And not to mention a thief.
So I wonder what kind of a Picasso he had there. It can't be a oil painting. It would have to be a sketch art, some other sort of. Picasso did a lot of other things, sculpture.
Why? Picasso could be worth, let's say, $10 million?
That'd be worth more than that in most cases.
Oh. Well, he bought the Wu-Tang Clan album for like $2
million. Yeah. And he's the only one that has a copy.
Yeah, it's the only album.
It's dumb. I can't believe anyone bought into that idea.
Not to mention the music isn't that great anyway. Major automakers posted lower U.S. new vehicle sales in February. Consumer demand cooled down. Question is, well, maybe that's because of rates. What's the story with that? GM posted a 6.9% decline in sales versus the same month of 2017. And the automaker said that sales to consumers were down 10%. They had some better corporate sales. But U.S. auto industry sales fell 2% last year. And in auto news, car maker Aston Martin is said to be thinking about a possible U.S. IPO.
So weren't they owned by Ford for a while?
They were, and I think they were spun back off. But this is my favorite car. I love this car.
You have one?
One? Do I have one? Can't answer.
Yeah, do you have one?
No.
Oh. You're implying you had more than one?
Well, no.
You know, they've run at the market every so often. I remember when they had the dual turbos, which I guess were, except for 1 year, they were all junk. And then now they got these different Aston Martins. Some of them are really pretty, got nice lines, and one of them's got this big, huge mouth. It looks terrible. I have mixed feelings about the – oh, you're talking Aston Martin.
Yeah. What do you think I was saying?
I was thinking Maserati.
Yeah. No, I don't like the Maseratis. They've cheapened them up anyway. The Aston Martin, the 2000 Vantage.
Oh, yeah. I'm confused. The Aston Martin is one of the prettiest cars ever made.
Yeah, look at this picture I put up there. Look at that thing. Now, that's a car. This is a bit of a
big one. Yeah, it's a gorgeous car.
Gorgeous car. Every time I see this car, I'm like, oh, what is that car? That's beautiful. And it's always Aston Martin. It starts at $149,000. It has a dual overhaul.
Seems high.
Well, that's where it starts. It has a 4-liter twin turbo dual overhead cam, 32 valve V8 that pumps out 503 horsepower at 6,000 RPM. 0 to 60 in 3.5 seconds. And now, just to put that into perspective, the 2017 Tesla Model SP100 in ludicrous plus mode would do 0 to 60 in 2.3 seconds.
Yeah, well, it's got four wheels of tons of horsepower. Mm-hmm. It won't go as far. The problem with the Aston Martin is the same as the problem with everything else coming out of England. It's a British car.
Yeah, yeah. It's got a lot of requirements for maintenance, I hear.
Yeah, I'm sure. It's a British car. They don't make great cars. I mean, the Rolls-Royce guys couldn't even stay in business. They had to sell it. I think they're owned by the BMW now. And the Bentleys are built by Volkswagen.
Yep.
So, yeah, they probably should. I don't know what they're going to do, but IPO should be good. You can get a couple of shares.
That would be good. Maybe get a discount on a car at that point. That'd be nice. Now, the hits keep on coming to Wells Fargo. There's more. More. There's always
these
more.
Guys. It never ends.
It never ends. The U.S. Justice Department in late 2017 told Wells Fargo to investigate its wealth management business after whistleblowers accused the bank of pushing inessential products to services or services to customers. They alleged that the bank pushed particular products or services to customers which they had no use for, targeting compensation based on the sale of those products rather than finding the best fit for the customer. So just it's deep. It's deep how bad these guys are. You know, we thought it was just this one weird thing at first, right? Where they were opening up accounts and then it was something else. And now it's this. And Warren Buffett keeps on owning the stock. So we'll see. We got some stuff here on cryptocurrency. Coinbase has been hit with a class action lawsuit. Insider trading during its launch of Bitcoin Cash. So we'll watch what that happens. There's a whole thing going on with that. Big news. This, you'll appreciate this. Five types of apples, which were thought to be extinct, have been rediscovered in northern Idaho and eastern Washington. Or as you say, Washington.
I don't know why people keep saying that I say Washington. I say Washington.
Yeah, they really tried hard on that one. I think when you're just, you know, talking, you say more of the wash. But so people are saying it. Is everybody wrong?
Yes.
Everybody's wrong.
it's from a myth. It's Curry started it as a rumor.
I said that about 2 years ago and you battled me about it.
Well, then you started it as the rumor.
Chat room, did you say Washington or Washington? We'll find out in a second what they're thinking. But here's the thing. The Lewiston Tribune reported this week that the Apple detective, David Benscooter, located the trees growing near a butte in the rolling hills of the vast Palouse agricultural area. The newly rediscovered apples include the Shackleford, the Saxton Priest, the King's Kidda, what is that? Kigzagaski? The Ewalt and the McAfee varietals. So wait a minute. First of all, there's such a thing as an apple detective. This is what he does? This is what he does for a living?
Does he have a big magnifying glass and a funny hat and he walks around?
Understand this, an apple detective. This is what he gets paid to do. He goes out and to find the chat room saying you said wash. What I don't understand is that he found these several ones somehow, and if they were rediscovered, what are they hidden? They're not being sold. The people are keeping them for themselves. Are these good apples?
It could be just apples that are casually here and there. We have at our place up there, we have a couple of apples, apple trees. That one of them is just ill-defined. I don't know if I ever could figure out what it quite was. It's a yellow apple that is real soft and mushy, and it turns out to be an apple that if you put it in in the oven and cook it,
yeah,
it explodes into a delicious souffle.
Huh.
It's the damnedest thing you've ever had. I mean, it is dynamite.
It's like a souffle apple.
Well, I mean, it's meant to be cooked. It's a cooking apple. Yeah. It's pretty obvious, but it's not meant to be cooked in an apple pie. It's just meant to be cooked, and it just becomes this fantastic product. It's hard to imagine. Hmm. I don't know what that apple is.
Yeah. Real quick, a leftover from last week before we get to our stocks and a few other things. I don't have an answer here. I'm hoping maybe you do, but who knows? Steve Duran writes in and says, I'm a longtime listener of DH Unplugged, Discipline Investor. I'm curious of your thoughts on Macquarie Infrastructure Corporation, MIC. Stock rallied 40% when the company dropped their dividends, yet the company's health seems solid. No, the stock was railed 40%. Sorry. Stock was railed 40%. So they went down.
What does railed mean?
Dropped,
what does that mean?
Dropped. It was nailed. It was railed. It was whacked. It was, I don't know.
Oh, okay.
Dropped. Yet the company's health seems solid. Besides missing one of the best shorts of this year, is MIC a long-term buy due to market overreaction? Maybe it's also a candidate for DH Unplugged. Do you know anything about this company?
No, never heard of it.
I think there's some. I think my recollection on this from when this happened is when you cut and drop the dividend, there's something else going on with the internals. Something is, the company's health is not solid. They need to cut the dividend because they need to keep cash because they're probably bleeding. And I think there was a lot more involved in this whole thing. Could it be, you know, that it was overdone? Possibly, but I don't know. You know, when they start dropping dividends, you got to wonder what else is going on inside.
Yeah, well, what comes next?
Yeah. All right, what is John C. Dvorak writing for PC Magazine this week?
The dangerous cell phone.
Which one is that?
All of them.
You're talking about for cancer?
The smartphone.
Is it dangerous for my well-being?
Because people walk down the street, they're looking at it, they get hit by cars.
Yeah,
pedestrian deaths have increased by some almost 20% because of these things. And I've come to the conclusion, I was thinking, why is everybody so... It's a very interesting column because one of those columns that kind of develops. So why are people diddling around these smartphones? I mean, constantly they're on the damn things. They're doing this, they're doing that. I have an offbeat explanation for the whole... smartphone phenomenon is a very unique and interesting column. I think it runs on Thursday.
All right. Over on PC Magazine. Go check it out over there. Let's take a look at the stocks that we have. Again, it's not an offer to buy or sell any securities. It's not a recommendation to buy or do anything with any of these. It's just a game that we play. It's a simple and upfront game. If you just decide for whatever reason to buy any of these or short these or do whatever we talk about, make sure you get professional advice on more than one front. And then also, if John C. Dvorak, myself, or Horace Company owns any of these stocks, we'll mention it, and we'll I got to put another one in here on mine. We'll go through it. You can also find all of these over on DH Unplugged. You have to go visit DH Unplugged. If you haven't done so, the site looks really great, and there's all sorts of things on there, and there's interesting, of course, not only the show notes, but you can find the weekly stock picks, the old codgers versus millennials. The millennials are slamming the old codgers. You can see the actual numbers there. And all of these things that we're looking at here. So take a look at that. You know, I just noticed something. You see this list here in front of you?
Of the stocks?
Yeah, you see the first one? I just noticed this.
Straight Path Communications?
Yeah, it shows 100% gain. You see that?
Yeah.
Yeah, the problem is, remember, Straight Path was bought out, and I thought the price was too high. That's what we got in it. And it came down significantly. I have to go correct this, actually, because now the stock is no longer... trading.
Yeah.
So I got to correct it to the last price that it was.
Yeah.
So we'll do that. But we got a lot of stuff bumped out. I mean, the problem is right now we got such a volatile market.
Right. High VIX, our list becomes very volatile. It becomes sketchy because it's bumping around too much.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I lost on just some new ones. Acorn.
That was me.
I'm bumped.
No, Acorn was me, by the way. And you know what?
That's yours. Okay. I got bumped on the other one. Yeah. Stamped Medical.
Right. But I want to say something about Acorn. So one of the problems we have with the show is, it's a problem, but it's Tuesday night. Wednesday morning, these things go live on the open. Right? That's the game.
That's our game.
It's we only have Wednesday to buy stocks. So that's it. It's Wednesday.
If Wednesday's not a good day to buy stocks, we're screwed.
We're in trouble here. So Acorn, I actually picked up Acorn personally at 17. And I sold it at 19. So right after this, it came down a bit more, came down to 17. We were bumped out at 17.31 here, right? I put a price in myself that I want to buy at I think the next day or that day at $17 even. I picked it up 3 days later. I sold it for 19.
But so, here.
Well, here, so this is Wednesday.
You lost money.
Right. Here it was Wednesday. So if you only have 1 day a week to buy stocks, it's a miracle that we ever make money at all. Right. Can you imagine if you're in a mutual fund, it's the Wednesday fund. You're in the Wednesday fund. We'll buy stuff on Wednesdays. We'll sell stuff on Wednesdays.
Well, I did well with Moroni Bio Innovations, which is up 15% in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, that's a good one. Church of Dwight is obviously selling condoms. So that's good. But that's about it. The Aflac was...
Yeah, everything else is pretty much dead money. There's not that much on here. We need to put more stuff on.
Well, I'm going to go back to shorting overstock.com.
Oh.
Now, they were investigated recently due to the SEC investigating a lot of ICOs, initial coin offerings. And, you know, I still think there's a lot of shenanigans going on at this company. The if you look at... It's really fascinating, actually. If you want, you really should read this. You should read the history of this guy that runs this thing. He was almost run out of the business. The shorts attacked him for a long time, and he was doing all sorts of really weird stuff. And there seems to be a lot of weird stuff going on again. Now, alleged, from what I read, because this guy will come after you. So I'm just saying, if he's listening to the show, alleged, from what I hear, I'm not stating the facts. I'm just saying what I read. So there's a sketchy there. So the stock kind of moves up into the 60s, moves down to the 45s. I'm going to short it again due to this ICO investigation.
Okay. So I have, I was looking at Chipotle.
Yeah.
But I don't know what to do because the insider trading's Pershing Square Capital.
Oh, boy.
They just bought $133 million worth.
You know who that is?
But oh, wait. Yeah. But oh wait, Pershing Square Capital at the exact same moment sold 133 million shares.
Hmm.
So what do you think that was? What was that kind of a deal? Some sort of a
swap? Swap
something.
Yeah. That's Ackman. He's been, you know, he's the one that was valiant.
He's a troublemaker.
He's got his butt kicked on that one. He got his Herbalife. He was just got totally ramrodded. He got railed.
He's got the right idea. Another one, at least, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. Another one that is showing some insider buying to the tune of about $10 million. I don't know about this one either. So maybe it's actually probably not a bad idea considering we had Trump as president.
Oh.
But is this RIG?
RIG because it is related to the oil business or RIG as in markets are rigged with Trump as president?
Hey, you got a pun in there. It's because it's Transocean, which is a big oil offshore driller.
Right.
And I don't know. Seems to me it's like Trump has kind of indicated he wants to do a bunch of release the hounds.
Yeah. Unless the tariffs cause them to have problems building those rigs.
Well, there you go. I mean, this is like a double-edged sword here trying to figure out what to invest in with this guy. So, but I put it on there because I need to put something on.
So RIG's going to go on there.
Yeah, let's put RIG on. It's
Insiders. Okay. All right. So we got that on there. All right. There we go. Okay. All right. That's on there. RIG is on there on the long side. 10% stop, of course, is part of the game here unless we say otherwise. And that's going to be about a wrap for this evening.
Okay, we'll be back Tuesday.
We'll be back next week. I'll see you then.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pockets, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a man. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, because I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.